E1. Number 9A.
Yes, yesterday night we were considering this law on the level of science itself. And I think perhaps I repeat myself too often, that may be, but sometimes one just feels that this whole concept is so big that one has one's inner longing really to try to convey what one feels about such a law, though one knows that words are very inadequate to do so. What is deep in my heart is really to see that with such a law, you free yourselves from any human approach to being. That therefore we go out right from the beginning from the oneness of being without any dualistic sense, without any sense of trying to achieve something, without any sense from climbing up to reality or anything like that, but really to take a very scientific standpoint, namely that scientific standpoint which says there is only one being. If there is only one being, then there is only one being, and that's that. And therefore, consciousness should just roam in the realm of that one being, and therefore not take anything into consideration which the human consciousness presents to our thought. So, going out from the synonymous term, being, and only contemplating itself as synonymous terms, would really encircle and embrace everything that is to be thought of. There is no other reality. Whatever comes afterwards is only an explanation to human thought why this law of science itself is the scientific law of being. This is one point. The second point, which I think is important, is to culture one's standpoint of the oneness of being. Always when we talk with each other, and I know that from my own experience, the students say that it is so difficult to stick with the standpoint of the synonymous term itself and only to think as a synonymous term and to take nothing into consciousness, which means that there needs to be an exercising of consciousness, a very disciplined exercising of consciousness to stay within that divine consciousness, so that one has practically no more any longing and any interest in going outside of that oneness of being and asking questions which one can only ask from outside that one being. So the discipline which is necessary, I think we cannot do or cannot culture otherwise than in any other art or science. Like in music, one just has to do one's finger exercise on the piano and just do that every day and every day for a certain time before one really begins to play a whole piece of music. Therefore, I feel in my heart that we could really be a great power in this world, no matter if the world knows us or not. That doesn't matter. but to be a great power in the world if we could really take each day our time and just go over these laws without any practical purpose, so to say, because this is the biggest practice. There is no bigger practice than really to practice these laws, because they cover the whole world. They cover everything. So it is not theoretical. It is very practical. It may not look practical for the individual purposes, but it is very deep rooted and has a deep penetration into the whole world consciousness. So if we could do that, we really would do a big, big job. And I can only assure everyone that if we do it and tries to discipline his thought in those laws, that it may take quite some time, for the one a bit more, for the one a bit less time, to get into that flow until that flow is natural. This is the way we have to go, that at the beginning it first seems perhaps intellectual, that first it may be a mental exercise, a mental struggle perhaps even, to keep and stick to the law, but slowly, slowly the tone of the law takes over, and then it becomes an atmosphere of God. I was always interested that when Mrs. Eddy defined science in her books, that there is one definition in it which perhaps seems to be a bit outside the usual definition of science. Namely, she says in the prose work that science is the atmosphere of God. And then afterwards she takes other definitions which are much more in line with the scientific and academic way of defining science. It's the atmosphere of God. And actually this happens, that the moment really thought is being cultured so in such a disciplined way that it really flows naturally within the laws, that then you really feel the atmosphere of God or the atmosphere of being. So again, my desire would be to find, I say that in every seminar all over the world, to find here and there a student who would be willing to culture these laws. Many are called, but few are chosen. And everyone can choose himself. That's the nice part of it. The Bible tells us that each one can choose himself. Like David did when he just took the showbread, which he was not allowed to eat, and said, I'm jolly well going to take them and eat them. And that's what we have to do. We have to choose ourselves and take the opportunities, take the grace that we are acquainted with such a big science and use it and love it. Third, we have seen yesterday that it is rather difficult to put into words, in certain terms, how to elaborate this law of science itself. It is clearly stated as a law that being is its own infinite being. It's clearly stated there are three elements, namely as being, first, second, the relationship within that being, namely its own. It's an isness law. And third element, again, being. So if one sticks to these three elements as a law, and begins to vary that law through substituting the term being with the seven synonymous terms, you get a tremendous elaboration of it. But that naturally means something, and this is the difficult point. It means that with the synonymous term, we really mean only that tone of the synonymous term which is unique for this level of science. Therefore, we cannot put in place of mind any characteristics that we know would characterize mind, as for instance in the list of the ideas or characteristics which we have in the compendiums. That list is much too broad and to lend itself just to that specific aspect of science itself. And therefore we have tried yesterday to cut down that list as much as possible so as to get an approximation of what is meant with the seven synonymous terms when we think on this specific level of science itself. And we have seen that this list is very small, that perhaps for every synonymous terms we only have two or three or four ideas, specific ideas, and that even these ideas are only some kind of approximation. But still they serve the purpose of culturing our tone. And if we do that, then slowly we forget even these tones and thought just flows in the law. I have taken yesterday at the end of that hour this law and elaborated it from the point of view of mind. Mind is its infinite mind. Mind is its own infinite spirit, and so on. And naturally, this is now something that each one really can do for himself, going through the 7 times 7, first tentatively, then always you will feel that things become more definite, more clear-cut, more spiritually tangible, until finally you get the rhythm of it. So I'm not going to go through all those 7 7. This is really something that each one for himself has to do. I can only show the methodology of it. Perhaps I just go through one to take it back into that law, and let's see how beautiful, for instance, it is to take life in this law, that life is its own infinite mind. You see, the teaching becomes very difficult, because as one goes spiritually, consciously through this law, we can't help that in consciousness all sorts of association of thoughts are being made. That, for instance, when I say to myself that life is its own infinite mind, you only hear life, its own infinite, and mind, but in one's consciousness goes on a whole world of life is its own infinite mind. And it's always a bit different with each one, though it keeps the tone, because it says to oneself that life, therefore the isness of being, this eternality of isness of being, is its own infinite mind. Think of it, that life is its own infinite mind. Therefore life is its own infinite mindedness. In other words, if I explain what I want to say, is that life is constantly mindful of living, of its life. And you can feel at once that this touches a terrific question, namely, and now I go outside of the law, namely, it touches that question where people feel, but when I die, a counterfeit of life, when I die, do I know that I'm still living? I have then lost my brain and my thinking, and then I don't know anymore that I'm alive. And just this one statement, you know, where you see that life is mind, is its own infinite mind, that life has the ability and the faculty of minding its life. Can you say minding its life? Of being mindful of life. That life is that consciousness, that awareness, because it's mind. It's aware of its life, and you would feel at once, oh, my word, because life is mind, and not my brain is mind, but life is mind. Therefore, life will always be aware of its lifeness. Can you say lifeness? See? I can, you see. But it conveys the atmosphere, huh? That life is aware, therefore it's aware of being life. And this awareness is that because life is its own infinite mind, it's its own infinite knowledge, it's its own infinite conception of itself. It's actually mindful, mindish of itself. Let's be not afraid of making these funny words, huh? Just to convey that tone, which is terrific. Think what how this bothers people to feel, well, will I know after death when I'm buried or when I'm burned up? I have no more thoughts, I have no more a brain. How on earth can I know that I am still I am? That I am still an I amness. This is a human approach, and you can see you approach the whole question wrongly. And when we put it into the right perspective, we see that life is its own infinite mind, so that life can never lose its mindfulness to be life, to be. Life is its own infinite spirit. Wonderful. Shows that life itself is its own infinite order of life, its own infinite substance of life. So that life, because it is mind, and therefore mindful, is mindful of its substance, and sees itself as reality, sees itself as the only substance of reality. Therefore, life will never lose a sense that it is deprived of infinite substance, of infinite reality, of infinite order in that reality. If you think about that in the quietude of your heart, it's terrific. We touch with these. If you go through these 7 times 7, you really touch all fundamental questions of being. All. There isn't one left out. So that life is its own infinite soul. So that life, that isness and eternality of being, is its own infinite, unchanging identity, its own infinite ego or self-sameness of being. Therefore, that life feels that it can never be anything but the whole of life, can never change its identity, nothing can touch that life. Because it's so, capital S. And you feel at once, if I go out from life itself, and not from my human concept of God as life, but if I go out from life itself, that life is aware of itself through mind, of its reality and substance of spirit, and sees that that reality and substance of spirit is its unchangeable ego, its unchangeable I am-ness, this unchangeable, untouchable self-sameness of being, life remaining life. Nothing can change that. And all that fear, that giant, that life could change, that it could come and go, that it has a beginning and an end, and so on, just vanishes away. Because then you go out from the true life, and not from the human sense of life. And something within oneself becomes very peaceful, balanced, quiet, happy, satisfied, because it sees life, which is infinite, can never lose its identity because it's its own infinite identity. Life is its own infinite principle. Wow! Life is its own infinite principle. Therefore, life principles itself. That's another word that is not in the dictionary. But life is to itself principle. Therefore, the human life has no principle. Mortal life has no principle. I begin to see that life is its own infinite principle. And when I see that it's its own infinite principle, I begin to see that life is its own infinite demonstration of that principle. That life is its own infinite demonstration of that principle as life, truth, and love. And so, being its own principle of being. And we know very well that that is so. That life takes care of itself anyway, even in the material form. Because life goes on no matter if people die or don't die. Life goes on, it's its own infinite principle. It goes on and on and on over billions and billions of years, no matter if people think they die or don't think they die. It doesn't matter. Life is its own infinite life principle, and therefore we can see the infinite demonstration of that life principle, because life is its own infinite life. Therefore, life is its own infinite individuality, because on the ground of that principle demonstrates itself always as life forms. And so I begin to see that life is its own infinite individuality. There is no loss, no destruction of individuality ever going on. Never. That gives me that sense that all the individualities of life are going on and on and on and on, because they are all gathered into the one life, which is life to itself. Life giving life to itself. Life being, at this point, life to itself, infinite individuality of to itself. Life is its own infinite truth. Yes, life is its own infinite affirmation of consciousness. Life is its own infinite consciousness. That life is conscious of itself. We never will lose consciousness of life. Sorry, I said it the wrong way. You see how one drops so easily? It shows that life is never losing consciousness of itself. Not we. Life is never losing consciousness of itself because it is truth to itself. its wholeness to itself. It's the infinite affirmation to itself. And so life knows what it knows. Therefore, life is conscious of its life, lifeishness, life beingness, of its beingness. It knows that it lives. It knows that it is eternal. It is not blind or unconscious of its eternality. From the human standpoint, we query that and say, how can we overcome death? How can we overcome unconsciousness, that we may not be conscious of life when we are dead and buried and so on and so on and so on? These are all the false questions which we put when we take a wrong standpoint. But from the standpoint of life itself and culturing that, we can see how life, therefore, if the I am is life, and my only I amness is the I amness of life, that is always conscious of its life, of its beingness. Always. And so you can go to love and see that life is its own infinite love. What does it mean? That isness, that eternal individuality of isness and being, is its own infinite plan, its own infinite design, its own infinite perfection. That life, because it is conscious in truth of itself, is conscious of its infinite design of life. It isn't blind to itself, it isn't blind to the newness of life that is constantly coming to the front, but it's aware of its purposefulness, of its aimfulness, of its totality of life. And so one feels that life, being its own infinite love, is that life which really has a great plan, has a great goal in view. And that gives one that enormous sense of rest humanly, even humanly. I take it right down to the human level, that great sense of rest and peace and security and satisfaction that shows that life cannot do anything else but to be and to live and move and to be in its own plan, the plan of perfection.